Which is for us, as small as we are, that's nice to know. The title of this message is How and Why of Forgetting God or Drifting Away. Remember the pattern I call the carnal drag that always dragged Israel down? And that pattern was described in Judges 2, 10 to 14. The pattern went this way. They would have a good leader, a godly leader. And in his day, kept them focused on God's truth, God's law, God's ways. And it was really strong leader like Joshua. Even the leaders who led with him, the tribal leaders, after he died and after they died, up until they died, things stayed on track. Then another generation would come, roughly 40 years, and they would forget God. So then God would and start to do evil. So God would forget them and allow them to be oppressed by their neighbors like the Philistines. And then after a few years of oppression, they would cry out to God, save us! We were wrong. We're going to go back to to Jehovah, the true God of Israel, the Eternal. And God would send them a new leader hero like Gideon or Deborah. We mentioned those, I think, last time, to rescue them. I want to talk about one aspect of that cycle, and that is forgetting God. How does that happen? How does a new generation forget the God of their parents and grandparents? How does that happen? And I think we will see a parallel. I realize it's not a pure, clear parallel with America, because obviously we don't have prophets directly in contact with God, and we're not in a theocracy, but there's still a parallel there. I hope we see it. Let's look at one of Moses' last sermons to the Israelites. Remember, Deuteronomy is another word for the second giving of the law. And he had already given them everything. But in Deuteronomy, he's reminding them of various lessons. And he's reminding them of a danger here, Deuteronomy 4, that they have to watch out for. Deuteronomy 4, you just sort of think of Moses speaking to the Israelites in some big outdoor gathering, and he's telling them, there's some things we need to watch out for, that if you don't, we're going to fall away. And obviously Moses was kind of almost on a parallel with Christ, because he said a prophet like me would come, which was Christ. So this is probably the second greatest man in the Bible speaking. And Moses says, Deuteronomy 4, verse 6, keep therefore to do them, he's speaking of God's laws and ways, for this is your wisdom. In other words, if you obey God's law, you'll be one of the wisest people, one of the wisest nations. Things are going to work for you. Just think of a nation that kept the Ten Commandments. Very little stealing, very little fraud, very little lying, everybody putting God first in their life. Family, unity, not overly covetous, helping your neighbor, loving your neighbor, all those. And there are lesser statutes that tell people how to help their neighbor, like returning your neighbor's lost valuables, even if he's not a friend of yours. Those are all in there. For this is your wisdom, your understanding in the sight of the nations, which shall hear of these statutes and say, surely this is a great nation. It's a wise and understanding people. It's like when Alec de Tocqueville visited America in the 1830s, and there were some bad things he said, but the vast majority, he said, the American people put religion first in their life. They're industrious. They have initiative. And he, obviously by that time, America was very successful, had expanded 1835 or so. Anyway, it expanded quite a bit. I think to the Pacific Ocean, hadn't gotten everything. California was still kind of up for grabs in Mexico, but still had expanded across the continent. Its success was remarkable, even in the 1830s. De Tocqueville just remarked about the laws and the ways of the American people, very independent. He said they don't rely on the government. They do it themselves. And that's, you know, very independent. He was really impressed. And your understanding in the sight of nations, who shall hear of all these statutes, will say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. But what nation is there so great who has a God so near unto them as the eternal our God is in all things that we call upon him for? And what nation is there so great that statutes and judgments so righteous as all this law which I set before you this day? And then in verse 9, he gives the warning. Because you know there's a warning in here, verse 9. Only take heed. That means be wary, watch out. Like they say, don't touch this hot wire. Like one of the dogs at the girl's house, he bit into one of the wires in the basement and got electrocuted. Like someone says, don't touch that wire. You'll be in trouble. The dog is dead, of course. Only take heed to thyself and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things which your eyes have seen. Notice, be diligent, lest you forget what your eyes have seen or your father's eyes have seen, and lest you depart from your heart. In other words, you just don't love it anymore like you should, all the days of their life. And also, teach your sons and your son's sons. In other words, teach your kids and your grandkids. Because part of your job is passing the truth on to the next generation. We're going to see where that's not being done very well. That's one of the problems, passing the truth on to the next generation. And if we don't, it'll all slip away. In our age, they say the greatest generation is the World War II generation. And you might, some would argue the ones that wrote the Constitution and that won the American Revolution were the greatest generation. But it doesn't really matter. You can argue that either way. But let's just look at the World War II generation as the greatest generation. They were the greatest generation, I think, for two reasons primarily. Number one, they had a positive view of American history and the Bible. Back, you know, prior to the 1930s, I think progressives, liberals, started in the mid-30s to really start messing with higher education and messing with our history. Prior to that, most people had a positive image of American history, even black Americans. I mean, you can go back and check prior to the mid-1930s. And they had also a positive view of the Bible. Most people, now I'm generalizing, but most people, you know, prior to, say, 1935, went to church, and then during the Depression as well, went to church on a regular basis, and to whatever degree their church understood the Bible, they gave the Bible respect and believed it. And that's true. And, you know, right now that people don't believe it, but you look at American history, you read the Mayflower Compact. That is so biblically oriented. It's like, wow, these people are really religious. You realize they came to America for religious freedom. They didn't actually come for prosperity. Now, they got prosperity once they realized the communal communist living didn't work and Governor Bradford put them on capitalism. Then they got prosperity, and then others of the same religious sect came over. And admittedly, the prosperity probably attracted more people in time than the religious freedom. But they originally came here for pure religion. And that also included Sabbath keepers. And we believe, based on the book, The True History of the True Church, the Church of God said America's the best place. And it was the best place for religious freedom in the whole world. As a matter of fact, the American Constitution was the first constitution to give a Bill of Rights. And the number one Bill of Rights is freedom of religion, freedom of speech, because they go together. First country to ever do that in the history of the world. There are a lot of other wonderful things in the Constitution, but I can't remember them all. And they say bad things about the Founding Fathers. They wrote a constitution that we still use to this day, the best in the history of the world. And I believe the only modern nation that still hasn't had to make major changes in their constitution is the United States of America. That's how good it was. You know, 1780s and 90s. I'm making a point here that people respected American history and the Bible, and they were reasonably religious. I realize that there weren't everybody, but even when they were wrong about things, at least they tried to be biblical, I'll put it that way. And the second thing that made them the greatest generation was the Depression and World War II. One of my history teachers said, and he made a good case for it, if you went to the roaring 20s, he said, the divorce rate really was going up. All kinds of decadence and crime was going up. That's when the gangsters got bankrolled in the roaring 20s. A lot of bad, I mean, it was a prosperous time, but the prosperity was eating at the American character. And he said if the roaring 20s had roared from 1920 all the way to 1941, he's not so sure we would have won World War II. And by the way, World War II wasn't just the soldiers showing character. Everybody did. They had rations for the whole country during World War II. They rationed rubber, tires, cars, steel, sugar, coffee, and some other stuff. And as far as I heard, there was very little cheating. People just out of honor. The government didn't have to come down with people. Everybody just did the right thing. You know, they turned in paper and scrap metal. And the American people were united after Pearl Harbor, as one of my teachers said, like they have never, ever been and never, ever will be in the future. And they just overwhelmed the Axis side. I mean, they so overproduced them that the war came down to keeping American weapons off the battlefield because we just overwhelmed the other side with numbers. I mean, the Germans might have had the best tank, the Tiger tank, but what are you going to do if you're outnumbered 20 to 1? You see what? It doesn't really matter. And eventually, we actually had better stuff as time went on, better and more. And women went into the factories, and the point I'm getting at, women, men, everybody were strong, very strong in that generation. So you're going to say, well, what happened? Why couldn't they transfer that to their kids and grandkids? Obviously, some of this is my opinion, but I believe it to be true. There were forces at work during the mid-30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, forces that wanted America to be an ungodly nation. They wanted to pull America away from the positive view of American history. They want people, and you'll see it in all the college textbooks, they wanted them to, it's kind of like they twisted American history where if you study, you become anti-American. You got to apologize for your history. The most successful country, they really poisoned American history. And they switched this thing of separation of church and state. I have my students in a class I'm teaching now. I read an article on separation of church and state, but they're so brainwashed they still don't quite get it. And I don't argue with them. I just have them read it. It'll help them. I said, wait a minute. Jefferson wasn't there when they wrote the Constitution. They don't know that he was ambassador to Paris. Two, all he did was write a letter regarding the First Amendment, freedom of religion. And the letter was, for the Danbury Baptist Church, he said, there should be a wall of separation where the government cannot mess with your religion any way, shape, or form. Now, they've twisted that on its head, where now its religion cannot be in the public square. They twisted what, see, Jefferson was saying the exact opposite. Now the government is telling all kinds of churches, including a bunch of nuns up in Colorado, that they've got to pay for abortion. And I'm not making this up. Okay, so if you think, I'm not making that up. And all kinds of other things. And they're going to be, they really want religion pushed out. And this force was a great force. And let's face it, they have succeeded in the generation that followed World War II and not seeing clearly the things of the past, how God blessed America. Like I was reading about the Louisiana Purchase, and when Napoleon and his advisors got the $15 million, look at it from France's point of view. France had some possessions in the New World, Mexico, Louisiana Purchase, and some Caribbean islands. Everything was going wrong. Just one problem after another was more of a drain on France. But they said, We sell this to the Americans, and I guarantee you the Americans will make the most of it because everything they do turns to gold. And that was actually true up to that point. And obviously, Louisiana Purchase, we're living in part of it today, Missouri, but it went all the way to the Pacific. And we can talk about more about that later. But the point is, even the French could see that God was blessing America. And if you study American history in any objective view, sure, America got lucky and things worked out, but it can't be all luck. Can't you see God's hands in going from Atlantic to Pacific? Actually, if you look at America at its peak of power, from Caribbean islands all the way to the Philippines, which is almost in China, and a whole bunch of other Pacific islands like Samoa, the American Samoan Islands, a bunch of others, American power, midway in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, Hawaii, those were all key strategic points, and the Panama Canal. That's impressive. And, of course, by far and away the world's greatest economy. Far and away, and probably from about 1850-something till, the Chinese claim they're going to overtake America's economy this year and be the number one economy. I'm assuming that if our economy keeps contracting, that will happen. But up until this year, going back that far, we've had the best economy in the world. Can't you see God's hand in blessing America? I can see it. Easy. Well, they get people to forget that. Just don't believe it. Forget it. America's a bad country, does bad things, and they've perverted history. I believe when the Israelites, in between, after a good leader died like Gideon or Joshua, that there were people among the Israelites who wanted to worship Baal and Ashtaroth. They loved the pagan revelry. I'm not sure how they would have done it back then, but I'm sure they worked hard at getting people to poison their history and to get people to forget the good things God did and move them toward what other nations had, toward Baal worship. Just like we have, most of us intellectuals in America and media and Hollywood leaders have been working hard. Like someone said, there hadn't been a positive military movie in America since the Korean War made. After I heard that statement, I started thinking about movies like MASH. So that's making fun of the military. And I said, they're probably right. Now, maybe there's an exception to that, but they say they all have a real negative something in there. Everything has come out, has pushed us in that bad direction. And I believe American law, at least I heard of someone who thinks he's an expert at least, say American law was patterned after the Bible. By the way, in the Bible, they had local Levites who were judges, and they would handle legal cases. If it was too difficult for them, they would pass it up to a Levite of a higher status, maybe a tribal leader. And if they couldn't handle it, it would go all the way up to Moses. He was the Supreme Court. Of course, after him, it was high priest. Well, do you see that same pattern in our legal system? You go up to one higher level. If they can't solve it successfully, it goes up to the next highest level until they get to the Supreme Court. Our laws were patterned after the Bible. And I never really realized that our founders were very Bible-oriented. Thomas Jefferson used the Bible as the basic textbook for the D.C. school district. People will tell you he's an atheist and hated God. He actually did a whole bunch of things. Now, granted, he had his own religious views, and he didn't like certain religious organizations, but it was more of a churchocracy. In other words, he was an independent thinker, but a Christian independent thinker. That doesn't mean he's against Christ. They grab on any twig they can get to twist history, and they're good at it. And basically, in the Bible, you had no king. God was the king. You had leaders and priests, but they didn't inherit it. There's no big central government. Most of it was local government. Federalism, that's what our government was supposed to be. The federal government did the big things like war, border, currency, the big things for United Group, but local things would be done locally. And it's hard to preserve that and keeping government from getting too powerful. Let me just give you two quick examples, and then I'll get back to the Bible. Look at the French Revolution. They started off with positive aspect of democracy, and they were wonderful. Then it dissolved into horrible violence, the guillotine circus, each little group would get a powder, and they'd chop off the heads of the ones in front of them, and it ended in a bloody mess, and then eventually a Napoleonic dictatorship. Or look at Germany. After World War I, the Weimar Republic, and we'll go into all their many problems of inflated currency and all that sort of thing. By the way, Germany at the time, 1930s, was the most highly educated country in the world. I bet you didn't know that, because I didn't know it until I read in some thing. The most highly educated. And most colleges are based, at least to some extent, on the German model. I didn't even know that either. Most highly educated country, a lot of top scientists were Germans. And it's hard to believe that a country like that would get taken over by the Nazi Party. But it's easy. And I'm sure a lot of Germans, of course the Nazis cheated and blackmailed and lied and all that sort of thing. But once they got to power with the Gestapo, the people were trapped. It's a horrible thing. And I'm saying mankind on his own goes that way. Can't you see that America has been blessed? Now, the question is, can we keep those blessings? If we continue to push God out of the public square, God's going to pull away from us. And without God, we might fall into some of the traps that have happened to a lot of other nations. We'll lose a free and open society. And what people need is a knowledge of God and character and discipline. The children of the late 60s and 70s, the children of the greatest generation, grew up to be spoiled, anti-American brats. Many of them. The Jane Fonda types. You know what I mean. The spoiled American brat types. Many of them. 40 years later, they're now running America. They're running the colleges, the media, Hollywood. Well, quite a bit. And their students, like we were talking on the podcast about, kids don't know any history. They don't know that socialism has been a proven failure. The fall of the Berlin Wall and the fall of the Soviet Union was a total failure. People starved, just horrible death camps. Same with in China as well. And North Korea is still trying to do it. A horrible failure. He says, but they don't know it. Because I ask students, once a year, I mentioned, how many of you know the significance of the fall of the Berlin Wall? Maybe one or two kids from a private school raised their hand. The rest of them look at you like, what? Never heard of it. This man said, well, even their teachers in public school don't know it. They don't even, since the colleges don't teach it, a lot of the teachers, the teacher's only 30 years old. They don't know anything. 35, I thought, you're right. A lot of their teachers don't even know it. So no less the kids don't know it. Certainly don't know about the Mayflower. And that's how things are going. At least throw in a little second grade humor. Just humor me for a little bit. It's corny, but we don't get too old and stuffy, right? Second grade humor. There's this big office building. So what does one elevator say to the other elevator? I think I'm coming down with something. Well, America is coming down with a disease called secularism. And secularism means that this nation, this government, and this society is secular. We don't have nothing to do with God. Nothing to do with God. That's what secularism means. Obviously, it's related to liberalism, progressivism, but it's a separate, it's kind of a religion of itself. It's a religion without God. They're excluding God from the public square. They're marginalizing the religions that are there and then trying to tell them what they can and cannot say in church, or they'll lose their tax-exempt status. And, the devil has to love it. Yes, push God out of the public square. We don't want to hear about any stuff have to do with God. They don't want to sing God Bless America because the word God is in there. And they don't want the Pledge of Allegiance because God is in there. Or I think in California they've changed that. They just took God out of it. And the devil loves this. The devil is saying, eat more candy. Relax. Forget about God and his laws and his ways. Go with the flow. That's what the devil is saying to everybody, including us. Including us. God has given us signs to help us not forget. Let's go to Exodus 31. So God is helping us learn not to forget God. And I want to just mention a few of those because they're important to us Exodus 31:13. I know none of this is new to us, but I'm just kind of reminding us of things we already know. Exodus 31:13. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak you also unto the children of Israel, saying, Verily my Sabbaths, notice the word S on there, that means plural. Sabbath, if you just say my Sabbath, that's a weekly thing. Sabbath means annual Sabbaths as well. My Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you. And every week when people see me with my little briefcase, dressed up, going to church on the wrong day, it's a sign that marks me as a really law-keeping, Bible-believing Christian. And they probably think, I got some neighbors that are suspicious of me, you know. But they're good people. I'm not complaining. I've got pretty good neighbors. For it's a sign between me and you throughout your generations that you may know that I am, you know, Jehovah, the Eternal, the Lord that does sanctify you. It reminds us of the true God. In other words, if you think of gods and religion, the day you keep is a symbol of the God you worship. You can worship the sun god. I think the Muslims, I call it the moon god, Islam, they have a different Sabbath. Can you see that it is part of the symbol of the God that you worship, is the Sabbath. Let's look at the annual Sabbaths. Actually, as we go through them every year, they're more about Jesus Christ than we ever thought they were. Most of the world never thought of it. What does the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread remind you of? Who's the true Lamb of God? Well, it's, of course, Jesus Christ, right? And you want to be unleavened for his sake, and he's the one that gave us grace so they could pass over our sins. Well, what about Pentecost? Well, Christ is the first of the first fruits. His resurrection starts the count of 50. And the church is the first harvest. That's the New Testament church of Jesus Christ, is that first harvest. What about trumpets? Well, when the angel blows that final trumpet, who comes to rescue the world? Well, if you get the idea. Feast of Tabernacles, Revelation 20, Jesus Christ, millennial reign. Last great day, he, you know, picks up all the leftovers. It's all about Christ. So if we keep those holy days and preach in season, it'll remind us and help us not to forget God. Because the devil's goal is for us to forget God and become lukewarm. He knows he can't make us totally forget, but he can get us lukewarm. I'm sure the devil says that's enough. We might lose out. And just to show you how far society's gone, in the 1960s, people living together without marriage, and let's say from 1960 to now, people living together without marriage has increased 15 times. 15 times. You know, 15 times. That's 1,500 if you're doing percentage. 1,500%. Wow. You know, you might say, well, I expect a 10 or 20% increase. It's almost as if they're destroying marriage. They're making marriage like, young people say, why bother to get married at all? By the way, they've also proven with solid stats, people who live together and then get married are almost up to 80% more likely to get a divorce than people who do it God's way. You wait until you're married to live together. And you can see the destruction of the family. Can't you just see it? It's all over the place. And I'm not here to say it doesn't affect us all and we all make mistakes and, you know, it's a mess. We all wish we could. Well, anyway, the devil is, in other words, secularism takes a toll on society. And secularism as a religion is a jealous religion. They're jealous against God. They're trying to push God out. And the devil wants to get us to sort of forget about God and become lukewarm. They pervert true history. And they turn our history from a positive into a negative. Here's my second and last second grade humor joke. Can I get one more in here? Why are elephants afraid of computers? Why are elephants afraid of computers? They're afraid of the mouse. I've had some of those computer mice mess me up. I didn't mean to click on that. What happened? Blame the mouse. Well, the secularists have their fears too. Let's go to Romans 1. I want to go to Romans 1. Romans 1 is... Now, obviously, Paul probably has in mind the history of the world and the Roman Empire up until that point. But obviously, it applies to us, too. So I want to be sure to say that. The Roman Empire, probably at its peak, during the early days of the empire, people had a lot of character, even though they were worldly. But the decadence was well on its way in Paul's day. Romans 1, verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness, unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. In other words, they're kind of holding back the truth. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it to them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. Now you realize he's saying that even in Paul's day, you could look at all the wonderful things in nature and say, there's no way there's no designer. There's no way this just happened by accident. Because evolution says it's an accident. An accident. I mean, like if you walked into a factory, well-designed factory, all kinds of watches and little things, and you say, it's amazing how sawdust over billions of years put this together by accident. Well, it'd be laughable. They got watches and all kinds of trains and conveyor belts. You knew somebody, even if they weren't there now, somebody had to design it, left it. Maybe running on solar power. There's no way. Well, here's what they're now doing. And I think the evolutionists are frightened. I talked to some biologists. They're the most radical people on campus. And I said, why are they radical? Because they fear they're wrong. You're going to say, why do they fear they're wrong? Because with every new scientific discovery, it chops evolution again. Like, remember they used to say single cells were simple? So not only are single cell animals extremely complex, but every cell and its internal workings is a miracle of biochemistry. And they have those RNAs and DNAs. I don't, you know, I've taken some of that those courses, but I don't really understand it either. But like you get like with a human being, you get 50,000 genes from your mother, 50,000 genes from your father. Anyway, half of the 48 chromosomes. I may get some of the numbers wrong, but and all kinds of things are inherited. And it's complex and unique, and yet that same design is there for all life. All life. That's the mark of a common designer, but a brilliant designer. A brilliant designer. By the way, do you know that scientists with all the great labs, and they do a lot of great things in power, they can move stuff around. They can take genes from one cell, inject them into another one, and do hybrids on all kinds of plants and animals, which is high-tech science. But they cannot, from scratch, with all their knowledge, make anything and make it come alive. In other words, I can breed dogs and I can mess with plants, and which is smart. I'm not taking anything away from the cleverness of people. By the way, the intelligence of people is also proof of God. It's like you see a brilliant computer. Oh, it just designed itself and built itself. Oh, yeah. Give me a break. But they cannot create life. They can't create a one single cell. And the more they learn about DNA and RNA, the more amazing it is. And I wish I was more versed in some of the science I've read in the past, but yeah, they kind of keep saying, this happened by evolution. How? Like I was talking to the kids, because we're trying to get a little God into their life. I said, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Your evolution cannot debate that subject. Because, wait a minute, if you have the egg first, of course, where did the egg come from? That's problem number one. But if the egg came, well, who's going to nourish it, sit on it, and hatch it, and take care of it? Well, but you can't have the chicken because chickens have to come from eggs. It's obvious it had to be designed and someone had to start it. Like someone built a chicken and a rooster and then they had it. You know what I'm saying? They had to build it. That's the only logical conclusion. But there are many other conundrums that evolution can't handle. They don't want to hear that. And they suppress truth. And any scientist who says anything, like the scientist who wrote the book, The Privileged Planet, it shows 125 ways Earth is unique in the entire universe. And this guy has been studying planets all over the place. Earth is, as far as they can tell, is the only planet suitable for life. And it has 125 specific design characteristics that make life like this. And it, of course, flies in the face of evolution and all that. Because do you know that when he published that book and then creationists started using it, the University of Iowa denied him tenure, said, no, we don't care if it is true. This is not the kind of truth we want out there. And he lost his job. He couldn't get tenure. He's now teaching at a Bible college. I don't remember the detail. In other words, they are suppressing the truth because they're afraid of the truth, if that makes sense. And why don't they want the truth? Let's read further. Romans 1, I'll finish verse 20. Being understood by things that are made, even his eternal power, God it, so they are without excuse, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imagination, and their foolish heart was darkened. Someday we're going to laugh at these brilliant people who are telling us all this happened, evolved by accident. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. They changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like unto corruptible man. In the ancient world, they worshipped men and birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. That's why the Israelites made the golden calf. The pagans, see, I think from an ungodly perspective, you don't care what people worship as long as they're not worshiping the true God. They should be worshiping the earth, earth worship, you know, global warming, anything. Oh, by the way, that global warming assumes that man can control the weather. No way we control the weather. We got some great global warming articles in the magazine. You might, if you haven't read them all, some really good material in there. Wherefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who are blessed forever. Amen. That's why they don't want the truth. For this cause, God gave them up unto vile affections. Even their women did change their natural use into that which is against nature. That's why they do it. Anything. It's like a disease, secularism. Verse 29. Being filled, and here's what happens to a society that goes the secular way too long. Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness. Have you seen the malicious crimes that you hear about more and more? Full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whispers, backbiters, haters of God. Haters of God. I mean, they really get mad at you if you bring up religion or God or the Bible in certain places. I mean, mad. Despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents. And this is not speaking of little children. I think it's speaking more of adult attitudes. Without understanding, covenant breakers. You can't trust anybody nowadays, or at least you can't trust them like you used to. There was a day when a man's handshake was pretty good. You try to do business that way today, you won't be in business very long. I tell you that. Without natural affections, implacable, unmerciful. I've heard of some crimes, killing babies and things that I just can't. As I say, unmerciful. Who, knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do they do the same, but they have pleasure in them. Much of our entertainment is celebrating people doing bad things. That's the world that we're in. That's what the secular disease gives you. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 5. Paul, now the context of this is a little different, but I think we can see some parallels. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 4, for we that are his in this tabernacle, meaning this body, do groan, being burdened, not for that we would be unclothed, but be clothed with mortality. I got the wrong verse. I was at 2 Corinthians 5, and I meant to be at 2 Corinthians 10, 4 and 5. Okay. My eyes are still not as good as they used to be. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 4. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. Strongholds are things like the idea that there is no God, evolution, and a lot of the humanist, secular, socialist, extreme ideas. Maybe a little socialism if used correctly, but you look at too much socialism, look at a place like Detroit. You get some idea of what it can do to the family values and society. Casting down imaginations, every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of God. Notice Paul said he had the ability to bring these strongholds down. I'm not saying we have the ability that Paul had, but I do think the church is the best place you can be to not get caught by the strongholds of the world, which are teaching things like evolution, there is no God, American history is bad, people that believe in religion are bad, religion is the cause of all the world's problems. I'm not saying there aren't some bad things out there, but they take it to the extreme. Global warming is true. Oh, yeah, give me a break. Out there, two of the coldest winters in America and Europe in the history of the last 1,500 years. Actually, it snowed in Egypt in the desert last winter. But there's still people pushing that stuff. I'm not making this up, regardless of the facts. By the way, you can say, why are they pushing it even though the facts don't support it? If they say that man can't control the weather, they can't get these big government grants. But if you give me all the, and the UN wants money from America to the poor nations as kind of reparation for global warming. In other words, it's a money game. It's a money scheme. But if it's God's in control of the weather, there's nothing you can do about it. And it's really all about money. I realize they wouldn't admit that, so I'm just telling you what I believe to be true. We can fight these worldly strongholds every Sabbath in church, read church literature. Our magazine, I think, proves clearly all the fraud involved in global warming. Mankind does not and cannot control the weather. We need to know the real American history, and we'll try to get some good history books and stuff to bring. The failure of socialism, the fall of the Berlin Wall. Young people don't know any of that. Let's go to Matthew 24. If you're close to the end of this message, you know the theme of Matthew 24 is stay ready, because the devil is going to try to lull us into a sense of, he's going to try to seduce us with the worldly material. Matthew 24, verse 46. Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find doing. So keep doing God's work. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant shall say in it to his heart, the Lord delays his coming, and begins to smite his fellow servants. In other words, I want to fight with people and do my own thing and be worldly and ugly. The end's going to catch you off guard. That's what he's saying. And by the way, and as I think Henry said at this point, Dave, you never know when you're going to die. Even if the end is 8, 9, 10 years away, your end could be sooner. So you can't afford to get too worldly because, you think, well, anything is possible. I mean, that's a sad thing to say, but it is true. So we want to, God in Christ says, stay ready. Satan says the opposite. Satan says, relax. Have another piece of candy. Get caught up with the world. You're too uptight. Go with the flow. God says, keep on trucking. The world will say things like, don't judge me, bro. And that's an excuse for anything goes. But we need to use Bible standards of right and wrong. That's not that you're condemning or judging people. Their final judgment's up to Christ, and it'll probably be handled in the great white throne judgment. But there are standards of right and wrong. The world will tell you there are none. But acknowledge godly standards, that's right. Stay with God. Fight the good fight. Don't let the devil and human nature seduce you to the ungodly tidal wave that's coming. One final set of scriptures, 1 Timothy 4, and then we'll finish this. In 1 Timothy 4, Paul reminds everybody that he has fought a good fight. In 1 Timothy 4, verse 5, Paul writes, persevere, disputing of men. Wait a minute. I meant to say 2 Timothy 4. Sorry about that. 2 Timothy 4, verse 5. But watch you in all things, endure affliction, do the work of evangelists, make full proof of the ministry. I'm now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. That's the Apostle Paul saying this, I have fought a good fight. Paul didn't relax and go to sleep and be seduced by the world. Paul said, I have fought a good fight. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me. When shall they give it to him? Not when he dies, but at that day. Not to me only, but to all of them who love his appearing. So at the second coming of Christ, Paul will have his crown because Paul fought a good fight. And we should keep loving and don't let all the craziness get to us. This blessed nation in the world, and most Americans don't appreciate it because you always just hear the negatives because that's just the way things are. And I believe America has been blessed, and I've been blessed just to be here. There are a lot of worse places you could be, believe me. And even that border situation, I understand some of the politics of it, but you realize the reason these people are rushing to get into America is what they see the grinding poverty where they are. So it's not such a hard choice from that point of view. Let's go to Psalms 119. And we may be in the process of losing those blessings. Anyway, I guess when we lose them, I'm sure we'll find out. Like I tell certain people, eat your bread crust. The day may come when you'll be glad you got your bread crust. They know who I'm talking to. Psalms 119:2. Blessed are they that keep his testimonies and that seek him with their whole heart. And it goes on to elaborate. Psalms 118:8-9. It is better to trust in the Lord than to put your confidence in men. It's better to trust in Jehovah than to put your confidence in princes. And it's really God that made those men do the right thing when they did the right thing. And it's God that we, in other words, a politician can come to you and say, I'm the new Messiah. I'm such a great politician. I look good. I sound good. And I tell you I'm going to do all these wonderful things for you. Well, if God is with him, and if God is blessing him, and if he's, you know, reasonably following God's ways, that might be true. You might get blessings out of it. But do you know there's so many politicians that have come along, like Castro in the 50s was considered the, he and Che Guevara, the great revolutionaries are going to save Latin America. Cuba is a basket case economically. Those hundreds of thousands of Cubans who got in rubber rafts, shark-infested waters to float to Florida, they didn't do that because Cuba was so wonderful. Did you realize that? You wouldn't risk that with your family and kids. That's, and there are tons of other countries you can say the same things about. And if you hide, what if you hide from God's calling? I'm going to go to Acts 9. It may seem like I'm changing the subject, but I'm not. Not totally, at least. What happens if God has sent you a message like he sent to Gideon, and you hide from it? We go to Acts 9, verse 3 and 5. Acts 9, verse 3. And when they had journeyed, this is Paul and the accompanying leading Jews who were with him, and they came near Damascus, and suddenly there shined round about him a light from heaven, and it was like a blinding light from heaven, and he fell to the ground, and he heard a voice say, Saul, Saul, why persecute you me? And he said, who are you, Lord? He knew it had to be God. The Lord said, I am Jesus, whom you persecuted. Notice, it is hard for you to kick against the pricks. Now, what were pricks? Pricks are like if you have a group of sheep and various pens, and you want them to go from one pen to the other one. You take sharp sticks or have them on fence posts, and you jab some of the sheep with a sharp stick to move them the direction you want them to go. What he's saying to Paul is, I've been jabbing and pushing you to go to Jesus Christ, and you have been refusing. We now know, in retrospect, that God was calling Paul. He was expert in the Bible. And I believe deep, deep down, the things he saw in Jerusalem, which includes the first Stephen, the first martyr, and Paul was there to hear that fabulous sermon that Stephen gave and how lovingly he responded when they threw stones at him. You know, Paul had to notice that, had to hear what he said, had to think about it. As a matter of fact, his message was so cutting, the Jews had to cover their ears to stop him because what he was saying was true. He says, you're as bad as those people that wouldn't listen to Jeremiah and the other prophets. And they deep down, they feared it was true. And think of someone with Paul's Bible knowledge being in Jerusalem during those days. He probably heard some of the apostles preach in the temple, may have even heard Christ himself preach, but probably at least the apostles, and saw various things and heard about miracles where there are plenty of witnesses. No, this is a fake. That guy had been sitting in front of the temple for 40 years. I've seen him there year after year. Peter came by once. Now the guy's dancing around. He's now a Christian. You know, Paul had to hear those stories and know, no, this isn't fake. Paul was fighting it, which is understandable. He's one of the leading rabbis of his day. He didn't want to get in trouble with all the big wigs. And, of course, he was blind for several days. And, of course, he repented. And the rest, I guess, is history. The point I want to make is that he was fighting it. And God wasn't going to let him get away. It's better to not fight it. Verse 20, this is why I believe he knew the truth deep down, just refused to accept it. Acts 9, verse 20. Now, this is after he got baptized and the blindness ended. And straightway he preached Christ in the synagogues that he is the Son of God. And you read the rest of the verse, he preached effectively. So effectively, they plotted to kill him. He had to be let down on the wall in a basket to escape secretly. They were guarding the gates of Damascus to kill him. Now, how could Paul immediately preach Christ? And he just got converted. The truth was in there. It was, you know, he was reading Isaiah 53 and we could rattle off verses in the Old Testament. He knew it. He just didn't want to admit it. So if you think you're in that situation and you're fighting it, just ask yourself, what does God want me to do? And obey and serve God. Don't fight it. Go with it. And if you think you need more evidence, because a lot of people think, well, I'm just not so sure that God's going to use me or that I should help the church or whatever issues you have. If you think you need more evidence, remember Gideon. God was not angry when Gideon said, well, just give me a little more evidence. Reverse that fleece miracle the opposite way. There's no way that could happen, you know, by accident, two different ways. Remember, God is on our side. If you need more proof from the Bible or encouragement from other people, ask God for it. God is gracious. He knows that at times, you know, like you can have strong faith at one moment, and then some other events happen, and your faith is down, lower. If you think you need more faith, more encouragement, you're feeling weak, ask God, and he'll give it to you.